Welcome to the second series of the Kintyre Way podcast. In the previous series, my blind dog Jed and I walked the Kintyre Way and spoke to people along the route. In these episodes, we're branching out a little to visit interesting places or speak to interesting people about the area as a whole. Jed died not so long ago, so for the next several episodes, I'm being accompanied by my three-legged foster dog, Mac.
Hey.
Yes, there he is, on cue. This podcast has been made possible by our wonderful beach clean group through Grab Argyle funding. Friends of the Kintyre Way ensure beach sections of our long-distance route are kept clean and clear of rubbish and plastic, remaining wild and beautiful for everyone. If you would like to help, get in touch via thekintyreway@gmail.com. In this episode, we're encouraging walkers on the Kintyre Way to look up. One of the many glorious things about walking the route is the night skies, which are particularly spectacular due to the extremely low level of light pollution in much of Kintyre. I spoke to Dr. Alec McKinnon to get a hint of what to look out for.
I'm Alec McKinnon. I'm a native of Kintyre. I grew up in Auchincorvie Farm, went to Auchincorvie School, which never had more than 20 pupils, I think, and went to the grammar. I'm retired now. I've been retired for a couple of years, but I've spent my career at Glasgow University. I did a degree in maths and physics. I did a PhD in astronomy, which I was fired up with from a very early age. And I was lucky to be able to make most of my career in the same place. Latterly, working in what used to be called the Department of Adult and Continuing Education. So my job was to be a university academic, still active in research, but devising and teaching courses for the public, academic with an outward-looking remit, and working particularly on enabling adults to come back to education and make their way into science degrees.
Before we get on to look at what to look out for in the night sky, could you tell us why the area around the Kintyre Way is so good for looking upwards?
It's almost a shame we don't have pictures here, because the most convincing answer I could give to that would be the light pollution map of Europe. Most of Europe now does not enjoy dark night skies. I was looking at statistics. I think 60% of people in the world, probably a higher proportion in Europe, do not get to see the Milky Way because of the degree of artificial light in the night sky where they live. So in the middle of cities, of course, you expect this, that you're not going to... Most of the sights of the night sky will be hidden. It looks like the biggest single area of real dark sky left is Scotland. It's the Highlands of Scotland and the West Coast. And Kintyre, of course, is in the middle of that. It's very dark skies. That's the main reason that you enjoy it there.
Is there a thing called the Bortle scale?
There is. Right. Aye. No. That's absolutely right. You've been doing homework. It's actually quite a recent thing, but everybody seems to know about it now. The Bortle scale puts a number, I think it's quite subjective to be honest, but it puts a number to how dark the sky is. It's a 9-point scale, and the smallest number is best. So in the middle of a city, that's class 9 skies. Most stars even will not be visible, and the stars that you do see are diminished, they're poor wee things struggling to stand out against the general glow of the night sky. And a Bortle class 1 sky would be somewhere where it's really pretty much completely dark and you can see anything that human eyes can ever reveal, really. Kintyre skies are class 2, I believe.
Mm.
Except around Campbelltown and Machrihanish.
Sure, but you don't have to go far out of town to get proper dark skies around
really
here.
Really dark skies, yeah. You see the Milky Way, for instance, with your naked eye.
So, onto the good stuff. When you look up and you look at the stars, what are we seeing?
Well, the name, the Milky Way, really, in a way, reflects the appearance of this thing in the sky. It's a band of light. It stretches right around the sky in a big circle, although part of that big circle is always invisible from our northern latitudes. But there's a there's always some part of the Milky Way which is above the horizon, visible in the sky. It looks like a band of light. It's a band of faint light that stretches around the sky. Some parts of it are brighter than others. In places, there's feels like there's dark band down the middle. It's a big sort of glowing band. If you have a pair of binoculars or a wee telescope and you point them at the Milky Way, then you start to see what this band of light is. It's lots and lots of wee faint stars. So that's what it looks like. The reason it looks like that is it's the visible evidence that we are in the middle of a huge disc-shaped system of stars and gas and dust. It's disc. It's much broader than it is in vertical extent. So if you're looking in the plane of the disc, there are stars away into the distance. And if you're looking out the plane of the disc, there are lots fewer stars before you're looking into empty intergalactic space. So the Milky Way on the sky is showing you that we're in the middle of this huge disc of stars.
And because we can see that so well from the sort of the Kintyre area, does that make it more difficult to pick out constellations, the sort of constellations that we've named, or what are we going to see constellations?
Yeah, that's a very good question. The Milky Way is something beautiful that you can see in the night sky. But even before that, if you're used to living in a city or in the suburbs of a town, and you come somewhere like Kintyre, the first thing that will strike you when you look up at night is just how many stars there are. Lots and lots and lots of stars. When I was a wee boy in Auchincorvey there, I didn't find it so easy at first to learn the constellations. There was a point, probably I can still remember, where I would go, oh, I recognise that one. That's that one I've seen in the Observer's Book of Astronomy or whatever. And a lot of the reason for that is just with so many stars, it's quite hard to pick out the patterns. People in suburbs have an easier time of it. They've got fewer stars to confuse them. So a star-filled sky is certainly, that's the first thing that would, it's not even leap out at you. You stand and you look at it and you just go, oh my goodness, if you're not used to that, if you've not seen it before. There's so many more stars and they stand out more brilliantly.
What advice would you give to somebody that's traveling here who's maybe not used to the darkness of our skies? Would you say just not worry about it, just marvel for a while? Or yeah.
Yeah, obviously I have some professional understanding of the things that you see in the night sky, but it's still a great, great pleasure to be out under it and just to look at it and enjoy it. It's really beautiful. Mm. And it is, if you arrive somewhere like Kintyre, and supposing you're doing it the comfortable way and you're in a nice hotel and you have a gin and tonic and a nice dinner, and then you step outside in the evening and the sky has got dark while you've been inside, it really will strike you just how beautiful it is, filled with all these stars. In terms of knowing what you're looking at, there are some things you can find to help you quite easily. So there are apps that you can download for a mobile phone, which of course it knows where it is, it knows the time, it knows what direction you're pointing it in. You just hold it up to the sky and it'll tell you the names of the constellations and it'll pick out the shapes that define the constellations. It'll show you which stars make up the shape of the eagle or the swan or the lion or whatever. There's one called Sky Map. There's one called Sky Safari, which I quite like. There's one called Stellarium, which some people I know have also found useful, although I prefer to use Stellarium on a laptop or a tablet. For somebody that's wanting to pay a wee bit closer attention to the sky, there are, as well as the Milky Way, beautiful sight of the Milky Way, you'll have seen it if you've been out looking at the sky. It's lovely. It's lovely, yeah. And we don't really. I don't think I've ever really glimpsed it in Glasgow suburbs living here. Mm. Folk that know the constellations a wee bit, there are other things that can go looking for. So if you know where to look, you can spot with your naked eye the Andromeda Galaxy, for instance. Once you know where to look, it's actually pretty obvious. In my mum's house on the at the end of the high street, I could just go out into the back garden and go, oh, there it is. And that's in Carletown, which is much more light polluted than the rest of the peninsula. In a really dark sky, there's another galaxy. So the Andromeda Galaxy, it's the most distant thing that your naked eye will show you. It's a light has taken 2.5 million years to reach us from it. The faint fuzzy patch that your eye shows you is the summed up light of a 100,000 million stars or thereabouts. Another galaxy on the same scale and scope as our own Milky Way, but much, much further away, that we're not in the middle of, that we view from outside. That's certainly the most amazing thing you can see with your naked eye. It's much easier to see somewhere dark.
Yeah, and did you say that shows up as a sort of fuzzy...
It's a fuzzy patch.
Wow.
Yeah, fuzzy patch. Constellations, if you can find the square of Pegasus, late summer, September, October, November, find Pegasus quite easily. And then from the top left star of the four stars of the square of Pegasus is actually one of the stars of Andromeda. So there are three stars almost in a straight line. The middle one lies a wee bit below the straight line. From the middle one, you look up, there's a slightly fainter star. And then you look up and there's a slightly fainter star again. And next to that slightly fainter star, there's a patch of light rather than a point, and that's the Andromeda Galaxy. There's one other slightly esoteric glow. It's called the zodiacal light, and it's about as bright as the Milky Way, I believe. You would see it near the horizon. It's a sort of cone-shaped. It'd be broadest near the horizon and getting narrower as you come away from the horizon, and you would see it. The best conditions would be just after sunset in the spring or just before sunset in the autumn. It's a glow from the plane of the solar system. So in the constellations of the zodiac, the constellations where you find the planets and the sun, and it's light, it's sunlight which is reflecting off dust that lies around in the plane of the solar system. It must be visible in Kintyre if it's ever visible anywhere in Scotland. But I've never seen it myself.
And apart from stars, meteor showers, I've certainly sat on Westport Beach, which is not far from the Kintyre Way, and just watched meteor after meteor coming down. I'm going to ask the stupid question, what is a meteor?
The things you've said already probably describe what you see. So a meteor, the other phrase for a meteor is a shooting star. It's a wee thing, brightens up, looks like a star, takes a fraction of a second or two to leave a track across the sky, and then it disappears. It's a speck of dust. It's a thing, the bright meteor that you might see, it would be a wee bit of dust the size of a grain of sand, perhaps. If it crosses the Earth's path, then from its point of view, all of a sudden it's moving in air. It's moving in the atmosphere. It might have spent 4 billion years in the vacuum of space before this, or the near vacuum, and all of a sudden it's moving in the presence of the air. It heats up. It glows brightly for a second or two and disintegrates, and that's your meteor.
And to meteors, they occur all year round, but you have quite specific times when there are showers.
Yes. The peak of the Perseids is on the 12th of August, and it's worth looking a night or two either side of that. There are a couple of other good nights in the meteor calendar. The 13th of December is the other. That might have been when you were out in the freezing cold. That's one of the guaranteed meteor nights of the year. Now, on the 13th of December, I, in the middle of Glasgow, I've gone out, stayed in a flat at the time I'm thinking of, and went down the stairs, out the back close, and That night of the year, between about 11:30 and midnight, I saw half a dozen meteors, which
Wow.
is, you think, oh, that's quite nice. But of course, in the city, all the fainter ones are hidden. So on another occasion, with a group of folk from one of my classes, we went out onto the Eaglesham Moor, which is a wee bit dark, just south of Glasgow, a wee bit darker than significantly darker than in the city, not as dark as Kintyre. And then the night of the Geminid peak, it was a meteor a minute.
Wow.
So the wee fainter ones are no longer lost in the light pollution.
Yeah.
The meteor showers on those particular dates are when the Earth crosses the orbit of a comet. A comet is a lump of ice. A comet is a lump of ice that is a kilometre or 5 or 10 kilometres across, and it's got a coating of dusty stuff on the outer layers. And when it comes in close to the sun, then the outer layers heat up. Some of the solid ice gets heated up until it's gas, and there are jets come squirting off the surface, and they carry this dust with them. And the dust winds up. The dust is, it doesn't just hang around, nothing just hangs around in space, but the dust particles wind up in an orbit as well. And their orbit's very similar to the comet, but they wind up populating the whole of the orbit. So every year at the same time we cross the path of the comet has followed, and we're going to run into the dust particles there. And that's why you have Geminids and Perseids and Leonids and Taurids and Ursids. And so those nights of the year, the nights of the meteor showers, when you're seeing the meteors, if there's enough of them, you might begin to get the sense that they all travel away from the same point, from a central point in the sky. And that point's called the radiant. And it's, to some extent, it's an illusion of our movement through this cloud of stuff. And the fact that all the particles in the cloud of stuff are moving it anyway themselves, it's a little bit like if you're driving a car in a snowstorm and the snowflakes are all falling down vertically around you, but your car is traveling through the snowstorm, and it looks a wee bit like all the snowflakes are they're all falling away from a point that's somewhere in the middle of the windscreen in front of you. So it's a similar illusion to that. It's caused by the Earth's motion, this point in the sky. So depending on the constellation that point in the sky falls in, the meteor showers take their name. So the Geminid meteors on the 13th of December look as though they're all streaming away from a point in the constellation of Gemini. Peak Geminids, peak Perseids, if you're in the right place and the conditions are perfect, you might see up to 100 meters an hour, which is, that's the point where it's beginning to become spectacular. It's exciting. It's really beautiful. More meteors after midnight, so it's worth staying up. And the darker the place you are, the better. Anybody that's watching the night sky in the early evening, you will see satellites go over. Again, when I was a boy, there weren't so many bright satellites. It was something very exciting. I still remember the excitement when we could see Skylab go over the manned space station in the early 1970s. Now there's lots of them. There's certainly something to watch for. The space station is so bright that you can see it. You can see it in the suburbs here. You can see it in Glasgow. It's a, you don't need to be somewhere dark to see the space station, but there's lots of satellites now. It's not unusual to see one. I was doing a wee session for some scouts aiming to get their space badge a couple of weeks ago, and we looked at the predictions. There's a nice website, actually, but we looked at the predictions from this nice website, and I could see that in the early evening when they were going to be with us, we could see it's actually the second stage of a rocket that put a spy satellite in orbit. So we could go outside and see this thing go over, and it just looks like quite a bright star, and it takes maybe 5 or 10 minutes to cross the sky as opposed to a meteor, which is only there for a second or two. And without flashing lights like a plane, so it's easy to tell it's a satellite or a man-made thing in orbit, let's say. That was quite bright, but as I say, if you're somewhere dark, then you'll spot the fainter ones as well, and they're pretty numinous now.
Planets. Which of the planets can we
Yeah.
look up to see?
Well, there are five bright planets which just look bright stars to your naked eye. So Mercury and Venus closer to the sun than ourselves. So because they're closer to the sun, you see them for a wee while after sunset or a wee while before the sun rises, depending on where they are in their orbit and where we are in ours. Venus is so bright, it's again, it's easy to see no matter where you are, in the middle of a city even. It's brighter than any star. It looks like a plane with its landing lights on, and it generate it's a regular source of UFO reports. People phoning up the police going, "Oh, what's that thing? It looks like a plane, but it's just hanging in the sky. It's not moving." Mercury is elusive. You really need to pay attention to books and websites and calendars and know which days it might be far enough from the sun for a day or two to spot briefly after sunset or before sunrise. And then further than the sun, further from the sun than ourselves, we have Mars and Jupiter and Saturn, which again are, when they're visible in the night sky, they're bright. Jupiter particularly is not as bright as Venus, but brighter than any star. Easy to spot when they're there, as long as you have an app to tell you that's what that bright looking star-like thing is. Or you know the constellation so well that you can recognize when there's something extra among them.
Can I ask you about the Northern Lights? We've been going through a wonderful period recently of being able to see the Northern Lights in Kintyre and obviously around Scotland as well. The peak was due, I think, is due in 2025 of Northern Light activity. Is that the case, do you think? Could you tell us? What are the Northern Lights and how you can look for them? Look north, I presume, when it's dark.
So the Northern Lights are, well, it's a glow in the sky. It's a glow that comes and goes. It's a glow that flickers. If it's a big bright one, there might be things that look like shafts of light, like searchlight beams almost, often with a very definite red or green color. The green color would be normal. If it's a big one, the red color is slightly rarer and more dramatic. The Merry Dancers, they call them in the Northeast, I believe, so, which really emphasizes that it's a glow in the sky, and a lot of the time it doesn't just sit there and glow. It's brightening up and fading away, and streaks of light are appearing that stretch up high. And so what the Northern Lights is, it's a glow a wee bit like the glow that you find in a fluorescent light tube, for instance. It's when the gas high up in the atmosphere gets excited, when the atoms of the gas are banged into by electrons or ions, which are they've been speeded up, something has accelerated them, they've got high energies, they bang into the atoms and they make them glow. A very big display of the Northern Lights is, well, any display of the Northern Lights is accompanied by fluctuations in the magnetic field that you feel near the surface of the Earth here. It's a magnetic phenomenon. It's caused when clouds of magnetized gas accompanied by a magnetic field, get puffed out from the sun in explosive events. And if they're sent off from the sun in the right direction, they arrive at Earth, they interact with the Earth's magnetic fields. The magnetic fields are disturbed, the magnetic fields fluctuate. That causes strong electric fields. The strong electric fields produce these energetic electrons and ions that bang into the gas and make it glow. So the drivers for the Northern Lights are on the sun. And that's why we can say that they'll probably be most frequent. Maybe we'll see the biggest displays sometime around 2025. Because the sun's magnetic phenomena, it's many magnetic phenomena, they come and go on a roughly 11-year cycle. They reach a maximum every 11 years, and the cycle that we're on the upswing of the cycle at the moment, and it'll probably reach its maximum late this year, sometime 2025. It's not completely predictable, but pretty much 2025.
So yeah, end of this year, next year is a perfect time
Yeah.
to visit.
I've not seen them in Glasgow. Too much light. Northern Lights is something that really suffers from light pollution. The main thing I would want to say is just to encourage folk to enjoy the beauty of the night sky, to watch it change. I'm sure in cities, a lot of the time people will step outside into their gardens and look at the sky for 5 minutes and think that's lovely and go back inside. But if you're staying somewhere dark and you don't mind getting a wee bit cold, it's lovely just to watch this revolution in the sky, to watch it change gradually during the course of the night. Even better to watch from one night to the next and get sense of the things that happen gradually during the year, the changing the constellations and so on. It's something beautiful that you're in the middle of and you can enjoy, and it tells us a deep story about our place in the universe.
Thank you so much, Dr. McKinnon, for talking to me. Music for the podcast is provided by Strange Crazy. Thanks once again to our sponsor, Beach Clean Group and Grab Argyle. And if you would like more information about the Kintyre Way, go to thekintyreway.com.